Okay, NAPMA members, welcome to our show. Today we have with us my good friend and my mentor, Grandmaster Jun Ri. Grandmaster Ri, welcome to the Sounds of Success.
Well, thank you for your invitation.
My pleasure. I've been wanting to do this interview for many, many years, and I have to say we've had some interesting guests on this show. Zig Ziglar, Tony Robbins, we had the senior vice president of Dell Computers, and Jean-Claude Van Damme, and just all kinds of people. But I have to say that I've never been more excited about an interview than this one today, because you are, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most iconic martial artists in history. So thanks for your time today, Grandmaster Ri. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for you are flattering me.
Well, definitely it's well deserved. My first question to you is this, sir. You've been studying martial arts now for over 60 years. You opened up your first school in 1962 in Washington, D.C. What's the biggest change you've seen take place in the martial arts industry since you've been in America?
Well, when I first came, it was sin to make money in martial arts, just like in communism. Ideology that in communism that the profit making is a sin. As a result, nobody really wanted to make money, and as a result, they all became poor. And now all the communist countries are dismantling. Mm-hmm. And by the same token, martial arts industry had the same, thought, which was wrong information, brainwashed in wrong way. And I wanted to break that thought. And so we really went in and commercial in television and newspaper. I mean, just we went in a full swing as just like any other business.
So the biggest change you've seen, I guess, in your career is that the commercialism that you once helped catalyze is really caught on nowadays, it seems.
Well, as you know, without money, that we cannot do anything. That's why even churches, they have to make money before they can flourish. Mm-hmm. They're, spreading their words. Mm-hmm. And in fact, 1964, that when Black Belt has, a conference, that Bruce Lee and I were invited as a special guest, and I gave speech there. Mm-hmm. In fact, that I just bought a, house, I told them in my speech, and Jack Dutcher, who was one of my head instructors, and he said, Master Lee, don't buy that house. If you do, that people in the neighborhood is going to tell you, you must be Chinese houseboy. And sure enough, one day I was, mowing the lawn, and sure enough, I was mowing the lawn, and a guy is passing by and whistling at me, and so I stopped my lawn mowing machine, and hey, boy, how much do you charge me for an hour? I said, nothing, sir. I get to share the master bedroom with the madame who owns that house. And then he just, thought it was funny. He just drove away. Mm-hmm. It's so true, We must make money to be spreading better service and receive the respect from the students and neighborhood and as a martial artist.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about it. You can do a whole lot more with profits than you can with losses.
Yes.
If you could look into a crystal ball, what do you think the martial arts industry will be like in 25 years from today? What do you see in your mind's eye?
Well, let me tell you that the last 40 years that I have been saying that I'm going to live up to 136. Because I saw a lady in Russia, a former Soviet Union, that a lady who lived 135, and I said, if she can, I will do one more.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, my goal has been 136. And when I got out of my surgery, everybody thought I'm going to die because I got a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only one who never had a sense of a fear that I'm going to die. I never thought I was going to die. And then when I'm really busy in my activities, my wife and everybody thought I was going to die. And I told them, because I said for the last 40 years that I was going to live 136, every cell in my body has been listening for 40 years. They begin to believe. They all reported to me, yes, sir, we are going to live out to 136. That's the reason that I didn't really, you know, fear that I'm going to die.
Well, mind over matter, I sure hope you pull that off. And as I've told you many times, I would like to be one of the first people to be invited to your 100th birthday. So I'm looking forward to that day already. You managed to grow from one school to nine schools at a time when martial arts was not nearly as understood or even accepted as it is today. And that's quite an amazing feat. Talk to us about the transition from running a single school yourself to managing a whole chain of schools. What were some of the challenges you had to overcome to make this work?
Yes, I really made it happen in the really first 10 years. I started in 62 by the time 1972, I had about 9 schools. And I think, first of all, you must believe in what you're doing is a positive thing for the you know, community.
Mm-hmm.
And you just must really work very, very hard. For example, 1967, that time I was giving Junri National Championship annually.
Yeah.
And we had 8,000 audience in 1967, of course. Bruce Lee was my special guest, and his name really helped. Mm-hmm. But I had to let the people know that Bruce Lee is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so I walked for 4 hours for 3 months to really put my poster in every barbershop. Mm-hmm. And so and everybody has to have about 3-4 haircut in 3 months. And
right.
They all had to watch about 3-4 times, and I was really shocked to really have so many people coming to watch that time. And you know, Bruce Lee brought Robert Cobb that time, you know, I Spy,
yes.
TV series, you know, and Ed Parker came, and so we had a lot of personalities, you know, really appearing in the event, and you just have to have, you know, promotion just like any other business.
Mm-hmm.
That you must bring some, you know, known personalities, because they are the one who attracts the audience.
And I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about PR as we move forward in this interview. A lot of the NAPMA members, they want to go from having one school to having two or three or four schools. Is there any advice that you could give to them about multi-school operations versus having just a single school?
Well, I believe that, first of all, they must really think in a service first, then making money.
Mm-hmm.
If you really sincerely try to serve your customers, you know, when they pay $1, you're going to pay back $2 value in service, and make everybody happy. And you know, really pouring money in advertising, television, and newspaper is really very, very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But once your service is good, now word of mouth will bring the people in, and that doesn't cost any.
Mm-hmm.
That comes only from your really your vested interest in serving people.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Customer service is king, and in order to give customer service, you have to have a servant. And I know that many of the NAPMA members think that way, servant leadership, and oftentimes that's far more powerful than, as you said, running a newspaper ad or a commercial on television. Those are some great points. Hard work, belief in what you're doing, and customer service.
More thing. In 1968, and we started a television commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that time for a couple of years we did maybe a couple of stations. But then 1970 to 1980, for 10 years, I was able to afford all the, you know, finance to pay the commercial that we did, you know, one spot a day in all five stations.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, there were not too many stations like we do now.
Mm-hmm.
We had the channel 5, 7, 749 and the channel 20 UHF.
Yeah.
And every station cutting my commercial 5 times a day for 10 years, can you imagine?
It's very powerful.
How many that is, and everybody recognized my face that time. Even now that there's so many, you know, all people, senior citizens now, they all remember my face and my name.
And I still remember seeing some of your commercials, albeit on video, the ones with Chun Ri, your son,
Mimi,
and Mimi Ri.
My daughter first saying, nobody bothers me,
that's
and
right.
Then my son follows, nobody bothers me either.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really thought, you know, I was going to say that. That was my idea. I was kind of afraid maybe some guys in the downtown picked me up.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I made my children say that, you know, it's cuter than really arrogant.
No, that's the brilliance behind it, you know. The kids were so cute in their uniforms and, you know, they definitely aligned with the audience I'm sure you were trying to attract to the school anyway. So,
yeah, that commercial really won the first place in the whole metropolitan area with the award, because that really makes people remember.
Yes. Yes, no doubt. You know, in the 60s and 70s, there was even more backlash against commercialism in the martial arts than there is today. How did you deal with all the criticism from people who saw themselves as quote-unquote real martial artists back then and who didn't necessarily approve of commercial martial arts?
Well, I really didn't care. I really only care what I believe in. You know, I tell them then time will come to prove that I was right.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough,
mm-hmm.
I was right. Everybody's really involved in commercialism today in martial arts. Without it, you cannot survive.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing, you know, I really believe that someday that martial art will be remaining as, you know, the performing art, martial ballet.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, We have, martial art fighting because we cannot trust one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, James Madison said, if all men are angels, no government would be necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I follow, if all men are angels, do we need taekwondo fight?
Mm-mm.
And then I say, if all men are angels, you know, I'm not saying anything. I'm just asking questions and let the audience have their own answer.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need the character education or Ten Commandments?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I came up the idea that slowly we must change martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
Because I see next 100 years we are going to really eliminate martial art fighting because we are going to build this totally trustable society among people in the next 100 years.
I see. Yeah, and as I wrote about in my book, criticism sometimes is the price of success. And you were criticized, but I think people now are recognizing that you were a visionary. And many of the things that you stood for 30 and 40 years ago are coming true or have already come true today.
Well, thank you.
Very interesting.
I'm proud of that, yes.
I'm sure you are. You and Bruce Lee talked about the business of martial arts from time to time. In fact, I've seen in your book that he was sending you ads from Chuck Norris and others. Can you share with us how you and Bruce Lee thought about the business of martial arts and the business of martial arts schools in the 60s and 70s?
You know, Bruce Lee did not believe in really having chain of his schools. He just... he had still some old thought, not business way, but I was really very, much business-minded in the early ages that at that time almost no martial artist really spoke out loud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may believe in business like I did, but they didn't dare speak up. But I didn't care. I as long as I believe in what I'm doing is right,
mm-hmm.
that's all counts. But time will solve that who is right and who is wrong,
mm-hmm.
and the answer will be shown in the time. If you really do promoting without really cheating, mm-hmm. or deceiving in the public.
Yes, yes, yes. So if I understand you correct, it's, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, but it sounds like you were aiming more towards commercialism, but Bruce Lee was not.
That's right.
I understand.
That's why he didn't have, he had a much bigger name than I did, but he didn't have any chain.
Uh-huh. I see.
Except just few loyal students that followed him.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. What are the two or three biggest realizations that you had that helped you create both a highly successful commercial school operation and that allowed you to consistently produce many, and I mean many, high-quality black belts, including world form champions like Charlie Lee and John Chung and fighting champions such as Jeff Smith and many, many others?
Well, I believe in basics, you know, really perfect basics. Once you have a good basics, for example, you know, one good punching, good chop, good front kick, good round kick, good side kick. What else are there? If you do those really perfect, then all these complicated forms are this, you know, combination of these five or six basics in speed and accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And fighting the same way. And you just must really, with the practice the good basics.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic is everything. You know, there is the famous book, you know, Robert Fulghum, wrote All I Need to Know is that everything I learned in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
That one basic in human society that we are violating is, you know, really cheating. And that really is the only crime that I can see of a human society. It's there are only a few basics. In golf, you know, Tiger Woods making so much, you know, money and success. How many basics in golf? One swing and putting. Mm-hmm. Just two basics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes down to, you know, all fields, there are only less than half a dozen basics.
Mm-hmm.
So stay with the basic. Then you are going to be successful. And I think that's the result that I had because of my emphasis in basics. We had a good form, performers, good, you know, fighting champions. And you just must love your basic as you love your students.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully put, and I concur. In fact, the NAPMA materials are indicative of that. Some people may feel they're redundant, but in reality, it's just a constant reminder of the basics: sales, marketing, customer service, upgrades, renewals, character education for children. And each month, the materials come to our members, and they're not meant to be redundant. They're just a reminder to do the basics, because those are the most important things you could ever work on, whether you're talking about business or fighting.
You talked about redundant.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you that my success is staying with the basics.
Mm-hmm.
So the speech that I gave at the, you know, all over the world, in UN, everything,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, same thing I have been giving for the last 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have been really saying and thinking and living by basic principles. And so my speech doesn't change from one event to another.
Mm-hmm.
And so those who heard me for 40 years ago, they are so surprised that I'm still talking the same thing they heard 40 years ago.
Yeah, no doubt.
And so you have to be redundant to make things really, really stick it to the listeners or the readers.
Yeah, and it's very hard to master the basics. I mean, you can become good at them, but it seems to me like really mastering the basics is a lifelong journey, you know? So you need the redundancy.
Yeah, so, you know, when people ask you, hey, Rob, I heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
I know you did, but did you do it?
Mm-hmm.
You just asked that.
That's a writer downer. I've got to definitely make a note of that.
Yeah, whenever they say, hey, I heard that 40 years ago, I know that, but have you lived it?
That's right. You may give me the same answer, but I'm going to ask you my next question anyway.
Yeah.
You've been responsible for some of the most successful school operators in the world. That includes Alan Steen and Pat Burleson in the early days, and Stephen Oliver, Jeff Smith, Larry Carnahan, Pat Worley, John Worley, and many, many others nowadays.
Michael Coles also.
Michael Coles also.
Michael Coles is a D.C. guy.
Yes.
He is really successful here in Washington, D.C. He used to work for me, now he has his own.
Yes, at the JRI.
they just go, branch out.
Yes.
Because just like when children grow up, they really go out their own way from their parents.
Well, I remember.
I used to resent that, but I don't anymore.
That's right. That's right. They have to leave the nest at some point. I remember when you and I were at Alan Steen's birthday party a number of years ago in Texas, and Mr. Steen had that big family tree on display, and it was stunning to me. There was his name and your name, and then underneath that, there was just this massive tree of some of the biggest names that is, I guess, have ever been in American martial arts that are from your lineage. So I have to ask you, what did these people learn under your mentorship that led them to such huge successes?
Well, really, as my student creed recite, we are here to really develop confidence through strength in my body, honesty in my heart, knowledge in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You have to have that. That really, I think, is well organized in my seven qualities of a champion.
Mm-hmm.
You must really, really develop your physical qualities first. From there, you learn how to develop the human qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, you can develop your businessman's qualities.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about the seven qualities of a champion later in the interview. So I guess what you're saying is that many of these people became so successful, either as fighters or weapons and forms champions or business owners, because of the seven qualities of a champion that you taught them. I understand.
And the seven qualities of a champion that really gives me the, what's the universal purpose of life,
values are,
and all that. I mean, that really solved all my questions about life problems.
I see. We'll touch about more on that here in just a moment, because it's just so critical. You've been conducting speeches all over the world for many years now, and at a very hectic pace, I might add. I mean, you've done seminars in Morocco and Russia and China and Japan and Kazakhstan. You've done them for the United Nations and the State Department. I mean, the list is truly huge. If I may be so direct, sir, this is very challenging work. Why are you doing it?
Well, I have a vision that the mankind is suffering when our Creator is so loving and unconditional love of a Creator and made us and put us in such a tribulation and predicament. And why? And there is a reason. And so I really searched my philosophy, how we can really help humanity, and I think I have really solutions to all the problems that we have. That I found only one problem is cheating, deceiving, and it's not that we don't really honor God. It's really He's punishing us. We are punishing ourselves by cheating one another.
Mm-hmm.
So if all the cheating is gone, if all men are angels, no government will be necessary,
mm-hmm.
is really so right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so that I have some, really big vision that bigger than anybody that ever was conceived, that I said, if we can reach as far as our thought can reach, then I was, I found I am contradicting myself. How come don't you think a little bigger thought? Then I said, okay, well, the biggest thought that I can conceive is to buy whole earth. Then I said, it's going to be a lot of problem. Then what would be next, best goal that I can conceive? Making everybody happy with every breath of life. And I'd be loved by all 6 billion people. When you are loved by 6 billion people, you'll be the happiest person in the whole wide world.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. You talked about cheating, deception. I guess we could extend that to the category of fraud, which is prolific these days. I myself have been a victim of this recently, I don't mind saying, though I won't reveal any further details about that. But when somebody does cheat you, rip you off, what's your advice for dealing with that?
Well, I am very quick decision makers, and I'm not very careful sometimes. But when it comes to money, I have some experience that I co-signed for some people, and I ended up paying that, and sometimes maybe even up to $100,000, $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I said, I'm going to really quit business. And when you do business, you just can't help but once in a while that you are, you know, forced into really deceiving here and there.
Mm-hmm.
This world, it's a very, very difficult world now. Without, you know, really deceiving once in a while, you cannot survive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, you know, not to really to deceive anybody, I'm going to stay away from business. Just go ahead, give the speeches.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm giving just nothing but speeches. I don't do any business.
Mm. Very interesting. Very interesting. Stephen Oliver mentioned to me recently that when it comes to PR, you are the best he's ever seen in the martial arts world. Please talk to the NAPMA members about the importance of generating PR for their schools and maybe give them a few ideas that they can run with immediately after listening to this interview.
Well, we heard, you know, Jesus was the best salesman ever lived.
That's right. The greatest salesman in the world.
Yeah. Salesman means the person who are able to really persuade your ideas to others. Mm-hmm. And so I really think that to be real good salesman, you have to really believe in what you are selling first. And you must be saying that whatever you are selling is going to be good for our buyers.
Mm-hmm.
You must believe that. And then you must really, to become a good salesperson, you must really constantly selling, and with a sincerity,
mm-hmm.
and there's no other way. You know, when you first become a salesperson, you may sell one out of a five try,
mm-hmm.
and when you keep doing now two, and three, four, and your batting average become 90%,
mm-hmm.
and once you reach that, you are going to be is a good salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the purpose of selling is to serve fellow men,
mm-hmm.
just like Jesus did.
I see. In your case specifically, you were extremely high profile. I mean, even at this time, I can't say there's another martial artist that has affiliated with President Bush Sr. and Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton and hundreds of congressional men and women. And you were the teacher for Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali and Tony Robbins. And, you know, you were on television with commercials and you've been in
Walter
movies.
Walter Anderson.
Parade magazine.
I mean, he's a very precious student.
the list is just huge. I guess, you know, for the average martial arts school owner that does nothing in the area of PR, they have a school and they have the build it and they will come mentality. I think that stuff only works in the movies. You really worked it, though. You were on TV. You were in front of stadiums of people doing demonstrations constantly. You became a major name, not only in the martial arts world, but in your own community. How did you do that? I mean, did somebody advise you to do that, or did that just come naturally?
Oh, no, that just come naturally. That really came from my sincerity to change the world without really getting credibility from this, you know, the world opinion leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they really testify that how good guys you are, you're not going anywhere. And
mm-hmm.
so, actually that I taught to members of Congress for 43 years now, three mornings a week,
mm-hmm.
that Taekwondo, there were two reasons. One is that I want to pay back what America had done for Korea during the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, and one day I'm going to be in confront with the whole public that maybe not very popular issues that you know, if I just, you know, talk sweet words only with the established society, mm-hmm. they're not going to make any change. You may have to really confront with what society is saying, that what you new thought are, the difference is. And then that time when I may get in trouble, then that time, who knows, maybe White House and Congress may testify that Junior is not a bad guy.
Well, I know President Bush Sr. gave you a glowing endorsement on video, which is, if you're going to get an endorsement from somebody, who better than the President of the United States? Congratulations.
Well, you know, I really, when the Korean television wanted to do a documentary on my life, I just said, well, my TV personnel, the crew wants to visit you just a few minutes, tell you what you believe in, what I have
great.
Done.
Catch.
Boy, he really did much, much better than I expected.
He
I was
really
so grateful.
Did.
I didn't spend the money to travel there, and he just, in 4 days, 3-4 days, he just sent it back to me.
That's absolutely amazing. I'll tell you, one of the things that we teach our NATMA members is the value and importance of social proof and getting testimonials from community leaders and their students about the benefits of training and all this kind of stuff. I have to say, you've probably got the best one of all time, you know, directly
you.
From the president.
Yeah, you know, that piece really I sent to every